everybody, and welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is podcast number... We have reached 80. That, my friend, is a feat of strength.
It's good to round, and it's double of 40.
There you go. That's our mathematician, Mazer.
Yeah, I use those math skills to do really bad arithmetic all the time.
It's true. I'm your host, Dr. Venkman, and joining us today we have Mazer.
Yeah, back with the math. I don't know.
How you feeling about Comic-Con, Mazer?
I'm pretty excited. I know, this is the night before we're driving up, and there's a lot to do.
So much
to I'm do. Told down is south, but I'm going to invert the world.
Inside joke that nobody will get.
I like it. We also are joined by Ben P. Hello, Ben.
How you doing, Dr. Rickman?
I am well.
Excellent.
I am well. How are you feeling about Comic-Con?
I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be my first year out there.
This is your first year.
I'm a little overwhelmed, but we'll see when we get out there. It'll be fun.
Pop your Comic-Con cherry.
Indeed.
And we've got P. Vader. Hello, P. Vader.
Holler at your boy.
Holla.
How's it going, Venkman?
It's going well.
Good.
How do you feel about Comic-Con?
I hope you guys have a good time.
Thanks. We really, really will. And we are also being joined by special guest, Miley Kane.
Hi.
Hello. I didn't say Miley this time.
That's good. You've learned.
You're learning.
I am. That's how we do it here. We learn. All right, real quick, we are going to go through some box office numbers. We are going to talk about Inception, you know, that big movie that we all were looking forward to by Christopher Nolan. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Just real quick, go through the top five. Inception came in at number one at $62.7 million. Number two, Despicable Me at $32.8 million. Three, The Sorcerer's Apprentice at $17.6 million. Four, Twilight Saga Eclipse, hanging in there at 13.4. And number five, Toy Story 3, bringing in a whopping $11.9 million. And I know we didn't talk about this today, but I'm really going to quickly just go through this because we've been having a good time with it. I'm going box office history. I'm just going to throw it out at you guys, okay?
Okay.
And you guys just got to live with it.
All right.
So, this week in box office history takes us back to 1988, July 22nd to the 24th. Okay, everybody, give your names, give your movie titles. Tell me what is in the top 10, 1988, July 22nd to the 24th. Mazer, go.
Me? I don't even have a guess. I'm going to throw out a Bond film.
that'll blanket guess.
Damn you and your Bond films. No. Bond is not in there.
That's my go-to.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the third Indiana Jones movie, Last Crusade.
I think that was early 90s, but okay.
That was early 90s. Good guess, though, but...
Who am I to correct you, though? I have no freaking clue about anything. I'm going to guess Body Heat.
Body Heat?
Yes, the Lawrence Kasdan directed. I think William Hurt.
It's actually a very good guess, but it...
but it I don't even know if that came out in 1988.
It's not on there. Okay. It's not on there.
All right.
Back to the Future 2.
Ooh, interesting.
That's and right. You would not be correct.
That's a way better guess than anything we did, though.
All right. It was a very good guess, but let me quickly take you through this here real quick. Number one in 1988, and it's fifth week in a row, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Nice.
At $8.9 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Number two, Coming to America. In its fourth week in a row at $8.8 million. These numbers are pretty low for the top two, right?
Yeah, they are.
Number three, in its second week in a row, Die Hard, $7.1 million. Mm. Number four, The Deadpool. It's a Clint Eastwood movie.
Oh, yeah. Dirty Harry.
$6 million. All right. Number five, Midnight Run, in its first week, 5.5. Number six, Disney's Bambi reissue, 5.3.
Wow.
Number seven in its first week in theaters, Big Top Pee Wee at 4.6 million. Number eight in its first week, Caddyshack 2 at 4.4.
I can't believe we couldn't guess any of these.
Number nine, Tom Hanks Big, in its eighth week in a row, made 3.9, and rounding out the top 10 in 1988, Bull Durham.
Nice.
$2.4 million. So there you have it. That is your 1988 This Week of Box Office History. All right. So, is everybody ready to talk about Inception?
I think Mazur and Mila Kane saw The Sorcerer's Apprentice. We just kind of want to hear from them about that. I mean, obviously Inception's going to be the major one that we talk about, but we might as well talk about
that. Yeah, we'll give it a couple minutes.
Okay, go for it. Give it a couple minutes.
What you just did isn't possible.
I have been searching all over the world for you. You are going to be a force for good and a very important sorcerer. But for now, you're my apprentice.
I'm a what?
At first it started out with, why did they make The Sorcerer's Apprentice? And then we first saw the trailer and was like, okay, this may have been cool. I saw more stuff, I got a little more excited. After watching this film, I think that there could have actually been a really good effects film out of this, but it was really, really weak. And I think the story could have been a real, you know, teacher-student type of thing out of, like, say, Karate Kid, or let's say the Kung Fu Kid, but we don't get that at all. We get love stories that are injected into this film to insert, you know, women into it, and it doesn't really work. So,
when does it ever work to insert women into it, right? Am I right, Mila Kane? Yeah? Yeah? I'm kidding,
make
obviously.
It all, like,
don't send us. Don't end up, send us
killer.
Hate mail.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to that because we've talked about it, and he stole all of my critiques.
Oh.
And so, yeah, the love stories, I have to admit, were pretty tedious. I think you could have had a female character in a movie who wasn't a love interest. I'm gonna put that out there. It's possible. It can be done. But
it also feels really weird. Monica Bellucci's in this film for maybe a total of a minute.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, and she seems completely wasted because she's actually, I think, a pretty good actress. So it seemed really weird that you're going to bring her in. You know, who knows what they paid for?
Yeah.
For just, you know, being slightly older, beautiful,
a
exotic
really
woman.
Stupid
yeah.
Role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and yeah.
How was the acting like?
The acting was it was actually decent, but it's just this, there was nothing there in the story to actually serve the actors.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage is hit and miss based on his whatever he's in, and then is it Jay Baruchel?
Jay Baruchel, yeah.
Yeah,
he
was good, but you could see what he was going to do in terms of comedy a long whiles away.
Yeah,
you could tell when he was going to stumble and stutter and. And do his pause, and
kinda
then do a little turn, and then do his shoulder shrug, and then move and throw his hands a little bit. You knew that was going to come every time something was being said. So, I mean, if you are hard up for an effects film, I'd say watch it. But in any case, I'd say just rent it.
Yeah.
To say you saw it.
The only other thing that I have...
There is a mop scene.
Okay.
The mop scene. And they were saying, oh, this is going to be so great, and this is why we wanted to make this film. And what would you say of that?
I've seen the mop scene. I saw the mop scene. They released the full film clip of the mop scene online, and it just looked awful. It made me not want to go see the movie.
I wouldn't say that it was awful. I was refusing to see the movie if there wasn't a mop scene in it.
Right.
But knowing there was one, it just was kind of... Like a distraction, also, like a distracting little set piece that didn't really fit into the rest of the movie in any way. It was just the like, music, hey, look, some mops.
Yeah, the music that's in the trailer, the like the, I don't know, the techno, that music is in the movie, and that's something you have the theme from the Star's Apprentice in there, and it seems so out of place.
Yeah.
You have the, that musical cue in there, and it's just, and they don't even do anything to dress it up. So
that's weird.
Yeah, it's really bad.
The only other thing that I have any interest in is Alfred Molina. I mean, recently we've seen him in, like, some weird stuff, like Prince of Persia and stuff.
I did not like him in this, yeah. Quite frankly. I didn't think he was good. I thought he was phoning it in for the paycheck. He's gone all Nicolas Cage on us.
Mm. Yeah. Although, not as wooden, I would say.
I would still watch
Alfred Molina over Nicolas Cage.
I'm not saying... Yeah.
Okay.
He's as bad as Nicolas Cage. I'm just saying.
All right.
The phony in for the paycheck is a Nicolas Cage type.
He's cashed
action,
in.
So
he sold out.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right. I think that'll pretty much do it, right? I mean, I don't think anybody else has any burning desire to find out anything else about Sorcerer's Apprentice. So, Dr. Brinkman, you want to move on to our discussion of Inception?
Oh wait, what? What happened? Oh,
did you just wake up?
Are we still doing the podcast? Oh. I'm
welcome
sorry.
Venkman, how did you get here? Do you remember? Remember how we got here?
I don't, I'm sorry.
If you saw Inception, you get that joke.
There's one thing you should know about me. I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
You're talking about dreams.
Mr. Cobb has a job offer he would like to discuss with you.
What kind of work placement?
Not exactly.
There's no way to talk about this film without just going into spoilers.
Let's try not to give major spoilers.
Let's do it.
I'm going all out. I'm going spoilers. I'm going to say, if you're going to listen and prepare to have the
spoil
movie
the film, because to spoil it, you'd have to know what we're talking about.
And if you're, if I feel like Inception is the type of movie where, I mean, I know P. Vader and I did, just avoided almost all marketing for it. I feel like a lot of people have kind of latched onto that concept for this movie. So I think if anybody is going to be listening to this podcast, they already have seen the movie. Otherwise, they would be like us and just avoiding everything on the internet about it until they can get to it.
I would have to say, like, as someone who did not avoid all marketing, the marketing did a really fantastic job of not giving anything away.
They gave nothing away.
About a month ago, for the first time, I saw a trailer that sort of ish told that the plot was they were going to try to get into Cillian Murphy somehow. But, like, that's it. That doesn't even begin to give anything away.
Right.
And so...
Yeah, I watched all the film clips, everything that Inception threw out there. I watched it. When I went and saw the movie, I did not expect... like 85% of what that movie gave me. So the marketing did an incredible job of hiding what this movie was actually about and what it entailed.
Yeah.
Well done, marketing team.
I think I'm glad to hear that. I know that P. Vader and I, when we walked out of the theater, we're both just expressing, like, how grateful that we were that we stayed away from it. And, like, our decision, I think, was totally justified. Just on the fact, because what I'd heard that the final trailer for the movie was really fantastic. And I'm a huge fan of trailers in general. So it was kind of killing me, you know, not to watch it. So I queued up the trailer before we left for the theater and had it, like, loaded and ready so I could watch it when we got back. And I watched it after we saw the movie. And I'm so glad that we didn't watch it. Just because... I mean, the sequence with the train, where it goes through the street and stuff, like, I had no idea about that. And they're just, like, little shots and stuff here and there. With the... It showed in the trailer the sequence of the door opening in the snow fort with Cillian Murphy standing there in front of the door.
Safe.
Like, you know, just little images and things that I would have been waiting for, like, subconsciously or not, waiting for during the movie to see that I didn't even have that.
Some things get trailer trashed, and you're like, where did that...
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
I know she kissed him, and then she threw Iron Man's helmet out
in
the trailer, but it didn't happen at the beginning of Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
So. I think, regardless of you know, how well the marketing campaign did. That's an interesting strategy of going media dark that I'm going to implement again on whatever movie I feel is appropriate.
Yeah,
the
next
future.
Big one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's talk about Inception.
Yeah, I mean,
terrible movie. The end.
Dr. Beckman, do you want to start?
I loved it. That's my favorite movie of the year. I thought it was amazing.
You sound pretty enthused about it, I'll tell you that.
I am. It's surreal, and I'm sitting there watching it, and it's just, I'm trying to take it all in, and I really enjoyed it. It's got so many different layers upon layers upon layers, and the characters were created incredibly well, and everything was just so organized and thought out. You know what I mean? It's like we don't have any backstories really on these characters. They throw these characters into the story, but it's like we know, you know, we get to know them, you know, what their past was like. Without having seen it, we get to know who these people are, and visually the movie was insane and beautiful. The story was complex, and it made the audience think, which is one of the main things I liked about the movie, because most movies made these days, it's just a bunch of special effects thrown out at the audience in 3D, and that catches their attention, and that's pretty much it. It's like story, story's like a side point, you know, or you know, this movie makes the audience actually have to think about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I love that. And on top of that, the film was action-packed, entertaining to watch. And so you have all these different elements that make a great movie that have been combined in the mad genius mind of Christopher Nolan, and he was able to connect the dots and create this incredible world and story, which I absolutely enjoyed.
Yeah, it was a great movie. I think one thing, I'm not in disagreement with anything you said. Just to add to that.
Right, just admit it.
No, I really did love the movie. I think just to add to that, the casting in this movie was phenomenal. I don't think any actor stood out to the point where I was like, oh, that was retarded. Why did they cast that person? I thought, you know, it hit a home
Except
run
for
on
Tom
casting.
Tom Berenger, right?
Really?
I don't know. I just, whenever I see Tom Berenger, I'm like, really?
But when do you ever see Tom Berenger? Is the question.
Well, that's why. Because I just am like, really, the substitute? That's who you cast?
You can't hold him accountable for that. It was in like 94 or something.
I can hold him accountable for it. He chose to do the movie.
He was making a relief appearance, and I feel like he did it well.
I was happy to see Tom Berenger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was fine. I just, when I saw like the cast, like Leonardo DiCaprio, Marion Cotillard, Cillian Murphy, Tom Berenger.
Yeah, it definitely took me by surprise as well. I mean, Dr. Bingman, I think you covered a lot of good ground there. I feel like this movie was made for me, specifically. Like, this, I mean, it has every...
Don't point your... No. Can't get all selfish here. So I say, oh, Christopher Nolan made it for me. Because he made it for me.
Did you not see the dedication at the very beginning? I'm pretty sure it said Ben Pearson on the screen right there.
Well,
but,
did you not see the dedication when Leonardo DiCaprio turned and looked at the audience and said, thank you, Dr. Vagman, for making this movie possible.
All right, we can play this game all night long. Cut that off. But,
you had to stay after the credits, though.
it was an Easter egg. Like in a Marvel movie. No, I mean, I honestly do feel like this is a movie geared towards, you know, people just like me, and like you're saying, the action is such a... There's so many things going on in this film that exactly just complement each other. It feels like a Bond movie at points. It feels like Ocean's 11 at points. It feels like kind of an old school romance at points, but there's also just this incredible timelessness to it already that, like, the movie just came out, and I feel like it has enough staying power to where if I watch it again in 10 years, it can't be improved that much, you know? Like, it has that quality to it, and I think a lot of that has to do with Nolan's kind of traditional filmmaking style, where he, you know, like you were saying, doesn't like 3D. He doesn't, you know, he likes to shoot a lot of things in camera, relies on practical effects instead of CGI. And, yeah, there was some CGI in the movie, but what was there was incredibly well done. I mean, that's that kind of helicopter shot at the very end where DiCaprio and Ellen Page are walking out of the water in Limbo, and the camera kind of goes over, and, like, the cityscape is kind of falling off in the distance. Like, it just looks awesome. There's not a bad shot in this entire movie, and I think that's a testament to just Nolan's style in general, and then the cinematography of Wally Pfister, who shot The Dark Knight and has been, you know, kind of working with Nolan for many years now. Yeah. They created something that's just, I mean, I've literally never seen anything like it before. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think this film, I mean, it's hard to make a movie have mystery and tension at the same time. Hitchcock said that was a really difficult thing to do, but Nolan pulls that off immensely. I think it was in your post, Ben, that you said that Nolan had been working on this idea since he was, like, 16?
Yeah, I think
years
so.
Old. So this is, like, his avatar.
Right.
He said. I was like, wow, that is an amazing detail. It just, the writing on it is unbelievably good. I saw a film a long time ago. It was Waking Life, and there's a sequence where Ethan Hawke is laying in bed, and he's talking about how sometimes, you know, when you go to sleep and you wake up, and it seems like there's been a whole day, but only 5 minutes has passed because you hit the snooze or something. And I was like, I wonder when a film like that's going to come out, and that's exactly what Inception is.
Yeah.
To go in and to think of all of these layers and go through and have a film that is science fiction, like Space Odyssey 2001, just visually just so completely different and so using some of these same practical techniques, is just great. Something I was thinking of while watching this was, it's amazing that there's a device that can be used handheld, portable, in a suitcase that can share people's dreams, and in a remote country, people can have enough money to just pay to do this every single day. And on top of that, you can have the device in your dream work as the actual device.
Right, yeah. That's
the technology allows you to, I mean, it's really crazy. And if you think about it in that way, it's really crazy, but we don't even think about it. It's just, oh, plug them in. Boom, they're in the Matrix, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
But I really enjoyed this film. It was extremely solid. And I love what you're talking about. The just the shooting style. There's no handheld, jittery. I did the same type of media blackout as well, and I finally looked at some of the effects and how they actually did it.
Yeah.
And there's a sequence when Leonardo DiCaprio and Ellen Page are walking, and then suddenly their feet step up.
Yeah,
and that was a practical effect. That was not them CG and going up. It was like they took two pieces of the floor and then they rotated it so that they could actually walk up it. And it was like, oh, of course, that makes complete sense. But visually to see it, it seemed like it was this complicated effect when it was actually just this box that they rotated.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cool little sleight of hand things that it's just these cool effects that it's like, that's why I love watching special features on DVDs and why I hate people who don't. Because sometimes, I mean, especially now, it's all just like, oh yeah, we had the mocap and then we cleaned it up and then we put it to the animators. And that's kind of a lot of what you see nowadays. And just to actually see, they built a rig.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because thinking back to that, I was like, I just assumed that was special effect, not a practical effect. So
yeah,
it's funny to actually know how they did it.
It's amazing. I haven't seen it a second time, but they're saying like there's all these little details. I mean, Ben, you've seen it a second time. There's like you don't notice the train, but when she's going on the elevator down, the train passes by when she's on the elevator.
Yeah,
I noticed actually the first time that the guy shooting at the van is actually the same guy who fights Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. That's the same guy, and I'm pretty sure it's the same guy in the snow area that actually gets the best of, was it Tom Hardy? Tom Hardy, yeah. Who's an unbelievable actor.
Yeah.
And I actually what film was he in?
Bronson.
Wuthering Heights
as Heathcliff.
The most recent Masterpiece Theater of Wuthering Heights. He played Heathcliff, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in anything else.
I've heard someone actually say, who's an actor, say, I'm afraid to act opposite him because he would eat you alive just because he is so charismatic and has such a physical presence.
My first comment was, well, I don't know if it was going to be my first comment, but if you guys ever let me talk, was going to be like, how fantastic was Tom Hardy in this?
Yeah.
Like, I really think he kind of, I mean, all the actors were great, but I kind of think he stole the show a bit.
Well, he had
no one knew about him. I mean, most people didn't know about him until.
Yeah, it was the best thing he's done, and I think this is definitely going to be something that will launch his career into the next level. I think we're going to start seeing more of Tom Hardy. He's actually going to be playing. He's been cast in the upcoming Mad Max films that are being developed.
Right.
He's taking over the role of Mel Gibson. So.
I think we should start the campaign now. Tom Hardy for Bond villain.
Yeah.
Because him opposite Daniel Craig.
Oh my gosh, that would be
amazing.
Yes. Women's panties the world over would just like burst into flame.
I wasn't going down that track. But
it's true.
Mila Kane, what did you think about the movie? Like, are you drinking the Kool-Aid as much as we are here?
I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid as much as you guys are.
Okay.
I can say that I loved the movie. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. But I do have to say, I thought that it dragged in a couple parts.
Really?
There were a couple times when I was thinking, like, oh, just get on with it. Not many, but there were a couple.
Okay. Any particular spots that you can remember?
I can't
or just
think
not?
Of them.
Okay.
There were just
I know exactly. I know exactly when. It's when they're in the kind of heisty moment, and they're kind of doing the planning part. And it seems kind of like we could get to things quicker, but I think they did a pretty good job.
No, that's not it at all.
Nah.
I think it's once the I think it's all of the slow motion once the van hit the like railing.
Really?
It had to be there though.
No. I know, like, but they kept showing the van in like really, really, really slow motion.
10,000 frames a second
That was the representation of time.
I realize. I get it.
To show that.
I get it, but it wasn't just like them. It was just like kind of in all the layers at that point. I was. Just
and I know.
Like,
I know people hated that part because every time they showed that van, the audience would laugh.
Well, yeah. There's nothing.
Really?
There's nothing new.
Oh,
happening.
Yeah.
It pissed
me off.
Hands floating. And,
well, I wasn't laughing, Joey. I was checking my watch.
My God, I have no idea how you guys are having that reaction to it, because
that's where you gotta up the tension, man.
Like, that, with the score,
was already enough tension. I was very, very tense already. And so it was like, tension, tension, tension. Okay, the van's still falling. Yeah, I know the van's still falling because, like, they haven't snapped out yet, so obviously the van's still falling. Let's go back to the other things, like, what the F is Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing, like, tying all those bodies together?
Yeah.
Which was a fantastic sequence.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was so...
Very Keanu performance.
Yes, very Keanu performance.
He was great.
And then my other like major critique with the movie, I'll get to in a second. But I'll just say I thought Marion Cotillard was great, and I thought that she was a fantastic idea of Christopher Nolan, like having this like, kind of crazy woman who just bursts through.
Yeah.
The subconscious and into everything and ruins everything.
Yeah,
was really like an interesting way of heightening the tension. I also really loved Ellen Page's wardrobe. I'm just putting that out there.
I love
then,
the fact that her name was Ariadne.
Yeah,
that was fantastic.
That was great. My other major problem, it's not even that major. I still loved the movie and it didn't detract from my enjoyment of it at all. I didn't like the ending.
I love the ending.
Now,
let me just say...
What specifically?
Yeah.
Specifically? No, specifically, I don't mind an ambiguous ending on a film. I really enjoy an ambiguous ending. But this one, for some reason, felt like, kind of manipulative and kind of, like, Nolan just couldn't decide, like, which way would be better to go and was like, whatever, I just won't tell them and then it'll F with their heads. But it felt like cowardly is too strong of a word, but it felt indecisive to me.
No indecisive. He knew what he was doing.
I know he knew what he was doing, but I think
let's just go
that path because he couldn't pick.
Let's just go
That's
around.
What it felt like. I could be wrong.
Let's just
and
go
my
around
brother offers a great rebuttal to that, and he may be right, but...
Let's go around real quick and sit, talk about... I'm voting for... He's in reality. Who's voting for Dream?
Mazer, I'll vote for reality.
I have a three-part argument for reality. So.
Okay. I've seen the movie twice, and even on the second viewing, for some reason, I thought that the kids at the very end were the same exact kids all the way through. Mazer and I were talking right beforehand, and apparently the kids are different at the very end. Like, they're, like, slightly older or something.
I checked in the credits, because I thought the same thing.
Yeah,
too.
And apparently the kids are, you know, a year older or something, like, pretty close
years.
In age,
yeah.
but slightly older, and... I don't know. I guess
they are wearing the same colors, which is
right.
Why it's so
that, and they're in the exact same position. So
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
in that.
Well, except the boy, he's almost in the same position. And originally, he's a toddler just sitting on his butt, and then when you see him later, he's on his feet, crouched.
Yeah, even walking out of the movie the second time, I thought that the kids were in the exact same position, that they were the same kids. So, you know, with the way that. DiCaprio's character kind of perceived them over and over and throughout the movie. That's the position that we saw them in all the time. So seeing that happen, I was like, okay, this unfortunately is a dream, because obviously the optimist in me wants to believe that he's going to live happily ever after and all that stuff. And I think that I do think that Nolan did that on purpose. And I think that honestly, ultimately, here's the thing. Ultimately, I don't think it matters, because he walks away, DiCaprio turns his back, and he's happy with his kids, and he doesn't even look to see if his own totem has fallen over. So it shouldn't matter to us, because it doesn't matter to him.
That's my brother's contention.
Good call. You win the game, sir.
But also, if he is dreaming, which layer is he at?
That's the problem. And that's
and
what,
if even if he is dreaming, won't he wake up?
If
no matter what, he will wake up.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Then he'll just go comatose, right?
Right. But that might be fine for him if he's in that. Because he's already dealt with Maul. He's already kind of fought those, you know, dealt with that guilt of kind of inadvertently causing her death. So if he dies happy with his brain going to mush, then I think that he's fine with that. That's assuming that the ending is a dream, but whatever.
Assuming the ending is the dream, is he deeper than Limbo?
Yeah, how do you...
That's where the issues come up, I think. And I've, you know, like I said, I just saw the second viewing last night, so having avoided all media of any kind, articles and things like that on the internet, I'm just now starting to, like, read other people's reviews and stuff of it and kind of get into, like, the theories of what was going on. So I haven't explored that fully yet, like how that could be possible and what level, you know, where they draw that line of where reality ends and where the dream begins at that very end sequence. Because
there's
an
infograph on Geek Tyrant if you want to see who's subconscious, what reality they were at, and which level.
Yeah.
And that was pretty helpful.
But there's also a theory out there that every single frame of the film is a dream.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that. I can't wrap my mind around that because if that's the case, then we're supposed to fill in the blanks on our own of what is going on outside of the movie with information that we're not presented with. Like, how do we know who is doing what if we're not shown or even
hinted
at?
Yeah, you're getting into, like, the nature of...
Dear people who believe in that theory, you're stupid.
If you believe in that theory, please write us in the comments and, like,
and
let me know
it.
How that makes sense, because
I'm thing
really
is, like,
interested to know.
If you can get really philosophical, Descartes, who tried to prove reality, couldn't prove it. And all he could prove was, you know, I think, therefore I am.
Perception.
Which actually is flawed, because he can't prove that his thinking is separate from anyone else's, so it's there's thinking, therefore there's existence.
Yeah.
You're going to really nitpick.
Well, there's the interesting thing that in Yusef's basement, that really old guy... all the people were hooked up to the, like 12 different people hooked up to the dream machine, and they say, the old guy comes up and says that, you know, they're here to be woken up because the dreams have become their reality. Who are we to say any different? Which, you know, kind of resonates that same point that you guys were just making. So it's like, it's, there's, man, Nolan, man, he knows what he's doing. Like, he puts those things in there for a reason and for us to talk about them and for us to question what we've seen.
Yeah.
The one thing that I do want to mention real quick is the second time around, I was looking for any sort of clue as to, like, hardcore clue that might be able, I might be able to decipher at the very end of the movie. And the only thing that kind of stood out to me is there's a sequence right at that same point in the movie. He goes to Yusef's basement and is put under with the sedative for the first time. He wakes up after a very brief, kind of intense dream, and then goes splashes water on his face and spins the totem, but it gets knocked off of the sink, and Sato comes in through the door, and he never spins it again, or, you know, like, that part of the movie is never resolved. But we don't know whether the totem keeps spinning there or whether it topples over, and, you know, that it's never addressed again in the rest of the movie, so maybe from that point on something could be I don't know. I need to see it again, honestly, to see what that means.
Like, yeah, but
then it becomes like 8 different layers at level of consciousness.
Oh yeah.
And then it's just insane.
Yeah,
and
it does get crazy. I think the simplest response, you know, reaction is probably the best one. I don't know. Regardless of what the ending actually means, I love the movie. Like, you know, I think that's a reasonable thing to say. You don't have to know every single explanation of every theory or whatever. You can like a movie even if you don't fully understand every ridiculous aspect of it. And I think Nolan achieved that for a lot of people.
I will say that, kind of refuting a little... I don't know. Actually, I don't even know where you stand now, Ben, to be honest with you.
I don't know where I stand either.
Possibly refuting what you said. I don't think Nolan... He's obviously having the audience think about a few things in this movie. But I don't think one of them is the entire movie a dream? That just seems like too easy, too like... Yeah, it's just like a cop-out. It's like, what's that sitcom where they wake up and it was all a dream?
Yeah, like Bob Newhart.
Yeah. It just seems like that. And I don't think...
Only that one was genius.
That was genius because it was, you know, first time ever done. And I don't think Nolan is going for that route.
Had the same arguments for The Matrix when they got out. Are like, are they really out? And it's like, oh, but reality could be another Matrix.
And
like,
Lost, too. Lost.
Yeah, we have all these, and it's ultimately, which do you decide is .0 for reality? Kind of got to just pick one.
I'm not saying
the same way that his character does. He just kind of picks.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the reality I'm going to go with for as long as I can go with it.
Exactly, yeah, that's a really good... that's a really good point. The thing, just to kind of respond to that, P-Vader, is that I'm not saying that I think the entire thing is a dream, but if it was, and I don't think that it's a cop-out for Nolan, because I think if he were to tell me in an interview or something like that, that the entire movie is a dream, I could see what he was trying to do with that, because the entire point of the movie would then be, like, what we were talking about, this whole perception is reality thing, and the character... Both Fisher, Cillian Murphy's character, and Cobb, DiCaprio's character, both go through full character arcs, and regardless of whether or not that's in a dream or any other state of reality, those arcs still exist, and those actions still happened in some form. So there is change in those characters from beginning to end. So if the entire thing is a dream, I think Nolan's kind of thesis would just be like, it doesn't matter, like, that, you know, that these things happen, whatever happens, you know, they're still, it's all about the perception of it, so, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's getting into, like, ridiculous philosophy, but...
it's unprovable at that point.
You gotta stop that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of stopping that, let's just end this. I mean, I feel like we could sit here and talk about this for, like, 3 hours
really
or something,
could.
So...
I mean, it was just such a great film. If you haven't seen it yet, then get your ass...
Well, if you haven't seen it, why are you listening to us?
Yeah,
don't see
watch
it now.
No, honestly,
watch
though...
the movie already.
It loses nothing on a second viewing. I won't say that it really gains much, because I didn't walk away with that much more information about it, but it's just a fantastic film, and it's definitely worth seeing again in theaters,
yeah.
if for no other reason than to support smart cinema in movies and to hopefully combat the slew of sequels and useless dance movies and other crap like that that we're getting in theaters all
Wait,
the time.
Wait, you don't want to go see Step Up 3D?
I don't know. I'm just I'm using that as an
just
example.
Joking,
but
dude.
I feel bad because maybe Step Up is great. I've only seen half of it,
you know,
honestly.
I people don't like 3D films, but I like 3D films for the fact that it challenges directors to think in three-dimensional space. Most films, they might as well be on a stage and only move in two planes. And that's the strength of a good action director, is use of 3D space. So, I mean, I think Nolan... I'll give Nolan a pass on not liking 3D, but I think most directors who don't like 3D are probably just afraid that they couldn't muscle up the visual skill to use it correctly.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I think we all suggest you go out and see the movie. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it.
Yes.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it again, so... I'm excited to check it out for the second time.
I can't wait for the sequel.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you go. Other than that, I think that's going to be our podcast for
today.
For today. I know it's short, but we, you know, Comic-Con starting. We're taking off tomorrow, so we got a lot of stuff to do. To prepare for that, and so we're just gonna leave you with our review for Inception, and the next time we talk to everybody, it's gonna be all Comic-Con stuff. We are just gonna go nuts and talk about everything we saw.
Yeah.
Make sure to tune in next week as well.
Tune in during Comic-Con too, right, guys? You guys are gonna
we might be able to talk to and record something during Comic-Con.
True. I mean, we're definitely gonna have the site updated.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's
For the
be
love of God, check the site, because it's going to be an onslaught.
It's going to be insane, and we're probably going to try and do some video posts this year.
Sweet.
We're going to just get as much crap and awesomeness on our website.
Crap and awesomeness alike.
I know, right? So, yeah, so keep coming back, and if you're going to Comic-Con... Just real quick, we are doing a meetup on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, July 21st, at the Omni Hotel in the lobby, right across the street from the convention center. And that will be from 8 to 9:30, and then we're just going to play it by ear from there. But if you're going to be there, come meet up with us. We'd love to meet all of you. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter. At Twitter at Geek Tyrant. Don't forget to fan us on Facebook. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Other than that, you gotta get ready, so we will talk to you soon. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye.
See you.
Bye.